Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 22nd of July, Anno Domini 2017. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things, choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues, here comes the news. As you can hear, Steve Ray, somewhere one step ahead of the law, somewhere in the Midwest.
He's doing a lot of running lately.
Actually, today he's still at Mac Ave. He's at Mac Ave all day, so if you're out and about, and stop in and say hi.
And ask him why he's not here.
That's Dave who wanted to say that. Yep. When Microsoft introduced Windows 10 and its Windows as a Service model, the company promised Windows users a steady stream of updates to their machines. The days of being stuck on an old version of Windows would be forgotten. Once you were on Windows 10, you'd have access to the latest and greatest forever. But yep, that support came with a small footnote. You'd only receive updates for supported lifetime of the device that you were using Windows 10 on. The old system of Windows development, with substantial paid upgrades every 3 years or so, had many problems. Not least among those problems was how many people opted to stick with older versions of Windows, which was bad for both system security and software developers alike. But the old system did afford a certain advantage when it came to hardware support. Each new release of Windows represented an opportunity to revise the system specs that Windows demanded. A new major version of Windows could demand more memory, certain processor features, or a particular amount of disk space. Instead, Windows 10 offers security and feature updates forever, subject to that ill-defined supported lifetime constraint. It now appears that the first victims of that policy may have materialized. Systems built around Intel's Clover Trail Atom processors, generally low-cost, low-power machines released between 2012 and 2015, are blocked from installing Windows 10 version 1703, known as the Creator's Update. Attempts to install are met with a message saying that Windows 10 is no longer supported on this PC. These Clover Trail machines largely shipped with Windows 8 or 8.1. If their owners had kept Windows 8.1, they'd be eligible for the regular 5 plus 5 support policy, with security updates ceasing on October 1, 2023. But the machines were deemed compatible with Windows 10 and hence eligible for the free upgrade that Microsoft offered to Windows 8.1. For the first year of Windows 10's release. Anyone who took advantage of that offer now stands to see drastic curtailment in the level of support for their system. Each Windows 10 update will receive security fixes for just 18 months. Version 1607, the latest that these Clover Trail machines can install, will drop out of support in early 2018. After that, they'll cease to receive any patches at all. This leaves the machines in something of a support limbo. The sticking point is likely to be the GPU. Clover Trail uses a non-Intel GPU designed by Imagination Technologies, which complicates driver development and support. Later Atom processors used Intel's own GPU designs, a move that could simplify their ongoing support. Whatever the situation turns out to be for those particular machines, the situation demonstrates some uncertainties introduced in the Windows as a service model. The supported lifetime of many devices is not well defined, and Windows 10 users could find themselves with considerably fewer years of device support than they would have received under the old system. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is, are you happy with Windows as a service? And your choices are, I knew there was a catch. I'm pretty happy. I dislike it, but what are you going to do? We hates it, precious. And you Windows people are funny. So far, we've got 24 votes. Half of you say you Windows people are funny. But I know you're going to have more to say about this. So if you scroll down on the left under Fascinating Stuff, you will see the forums. the second forum down is the poll discussion. And currently, at least, the first item under poll discussion is 22, July 17. Are you happy with Windows as a service? Three people have spoken so far. And I know that you will have much to say about this, so please join us there. Also, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, well, it's just like anything else. You know, they're excuse me. They're not making money. Wow, something crawled in my throat. They just aren't making the money. Yep. And, you know, they're scrambling to try to cut cost. And by not having to support that part, it saves them money.
Yep.
Because there's no money in it for them. I mean, there's no, it's not like they're going to be able to, you know, sell them other things, add-ons in it, because that machine won't be able to do it.
Right.
So they're just cutting the loss, and let's face it, they're in panic mode. Whether folks want to admit it or not, Microsoft, you know, is still in panic mode, trying to scramble on what this, the next best thing they're going to do. Because like I was saying to my wife, it's like they rode the wave, and now this wave has come into shore, and they got to try to find something else to catch, because there's nothing else new that they can do to Windows, even with their Office products and everything else. It's more or less hit a wall. It's done the thing, and now, you know, Google's passing them and offering a lot of stuff for free.
Yep.
There's so much stuff for free and not having to worry about, oh, is this update going to mess up my machine and this and that, and is this going to run, is that going to run? You don't have those worries. My Chromebook, I don't think about that.
Right. In fact, I got an update waiting here. All I have to do is reboot.
And there
and I have the newest, latest, and greatest.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, great in that you don't have to worry about the spyware, the malware, the viruses, everything else, because it protects itself. If it doesn't look like the original, oh, boom, and something does crawl in there, it'll just set it back to the factory defaults.
Microsoft is actually only making real money in one aspect of its business, which is Office 365. Mm-hmm. People are actually paying money to Microsoft to run the Office suite online. Mm-hmm. I don't know why.
Yeah.
There are so many free alternatives, but whatever. God bless them. Microsoft is making money at that, and that is the thing they're making money on right now.
Yeah, because their OS, like I say, other than rearranging things and calling it 10 and, you know, 11 will be out next and whatever, there's no real incentive.
At the high end, people are buying Macs. Mm-hmm. At the low end, people are buying Chromebooks.
Yeah.
In schools, people are buying Chromebooks. So they don't have the Microsoft experience. They don't think of Microsoft as the vendor of choice.
Right, because their tablets do everything.
So when those people go out into the business world, they're going to want to know why it is that I have to run Office. They're going to want to know why it is that I have to, that I can't run a package through my web browser.
Yeah.
Our company has a website. Why is this not stuff not up as a web thing?
And it's protected. Do it right up on the cloud. I mean,
right. And this is what people are going to be asking very soon as they graduate high school and college. And those people are using, to a greater and greater extent, those people are using Chromebooks.
Yeah.
And let's face it, when you can buy a $250 device that does everything an $800 device does, why would you buy the $800 device?
And along with that $800 device, once you get going, and this is well known through Microsoft, is that following year, you're going to have to renew the license agreement with your operating system. Oh, gee, let's see the Chromebook. No, it updates automatically, and it's, oh, free.
And as you said, I don't have to buy antivirus. I don't need the number of support people. It's easy enough to buy. You need, let's say you need 100 Chromebooks.
Mm-hmm.
Buy 120.
Yeah.
Now, 20 of them are sitting in a closet. If somebody needs it, you pop it open, you charge it up, you update it. You hand it to them. Done. Done.
Yeah. And they're locked down, so you know you can control what they can do with it and everything else.
Oh, and that management console that Microsoft charges you a metric bucket load of cash for?
Mm-hmm.
It's free.
Yeah.
It's free on Google.
Thank you.
And it does, it locks it down as much or as little as you want. Mm-hmm. And one person can manage thousands upon thousands upon thousands of Chromebooks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's the way it's going to go. And the other thing that's going to be, like you said, startling for these kids, once they get into the corporate America, that they're used to doing things in Google.
Yep.
You know, Google Docs, Google, you know, because there you can do everything. Spreadsheets, presentation, it's all there.
Yep.
And they're going to sit there and say, because, you know, big corporate America right now is wound around Office.
Yep.
Well, you got to know Word, Excel, PowerPoint. This does the same thing.
What's happening now in a lot of schools, RIT is one of them. They've bought into the Google Suite. So, in fact, I believe many schools are given the Google Suite, but if they are buying into it, they're buying into it really cheap.
Mm-hmm.
And you get your mail through Google.
Yeah.
Companies love that. They don't have to maintain the hardware. They don't have to maintain the software. They don't have to have as many people. It's a beautiful thing. Google, they get their mail through Google. By using the Google Suite of the word processor and the spreadsheet, the presentation package, and the drawing package, and
the whole
forms package, and the everything else package that comes along with it, they can easily and quickly share documents with students, with each other, with whatever. You can collaborate. Students who do group projects collaborate directly online. Whether they're sitting together in the same room or they're across the nation,
yeah,
and faculty who do collaborating with other faculty can do it through this, and people are finding. I was talking to a guy the other day, and he was, you know, he had been for many years a huge Office, Microsoft Office fan, big fan.
Mm-hmm.
I said, so he's working away and he's working in Google Docs. I said, what happened to Office? He stopped and he said, do you know I haven't even started Office in a year?
Yeah. Well, I had somebody coming in, you know, came in and wanted to know about the Chromebook. And they said, well, you know, I like doing playing around with my photos and all that. And I also like to play around with music. I says, go to the Google Store. You can find the apps there. Put it down there on your desktop. There's nothing up there. Games, tools, everything else that, you know, just like your phone. You can go to the Google Store, and they're up there. You can download them, put them on your Chromebook, and do stuff. And, oh, down the road, you're going to be able to run any of the apps that you currently run on your phone also on the Chromebook.
Right. I have a friend who does audio and video editing, and he now does it all on his Chromebook. Well, Chromebook and his Chrome box, which is the desktop,
because
it's got a bigger monitor and blah, blah, blah. But he does it on those two things. And it is, for him, a little slower because he hasn't got great internet access. And so,
he's not like you.
Unlike me.
It's got green light.
Who has green light and loves it. But he's so loading stuff up is a little bit slow. Saving stuff is a little bit slow. But only a little bit slow. And he says, I can do everything that my $1,000 software package did. Everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have to upgrade it, and I don't have to worry about it. And if my machine dies, it doesn't matter because it's all up in the cloud. He said, I'll never switch back. Now, he's also got an insane amount of skill, so him using those tools means that he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, he's got his...
And he's also patient. He knows that it's going to take a little longer to upload stuff, but that's a trade-off he's willing to make. You know, if there are people who will not make those trade-offs, and I get that. But it's kind of amazing how that stuff has taken over, and how you can do audio editing, video editing on the web, for Pete's sake. There's a lot of that there. All right, we're going to take a quick break, back in just a couple of little minutes with Dave Enright and me, Nick Francesco. It is 19 minutes after the hour. Good thing we're taking a break. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the whole universe. It's Soundbites on the truly great and truly grateful to be member supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415.
You know, one thing I noticed, and this is going back to, you know, talking about how computers have become our big life now, you know, we're going around with the tablets, you know, and our laptops, they go everywhere, as you see folks, coffee shops and everything else, you know, they're glued, you know, to their tablets or their phones. You know, but with my new job, you know, I drive around quite a bit, to say the least. And one observation I came up with, in driving around, I see more and more people, whether they're sitting at bus stops or walk along the street. And you know what? They're not looking up. They're looking down.
Yep.
And all they're doing is sitting there staring at their phones and doing this. Or you see folks listening to the music and that. 90% of the folks are glued to their phone. As a matter of fact, I saw one guy, I almost burst out laughing, almost walked into a telephone pole.
Oh, I've seen people do it.
I'm sitting at a light, and he's so focused on that. He almost ran into the stupid phone.
I was driving my daughter somewhere, probably to meet some friends for coffee. We're stopped at a light, and she goes, Dad, look over there. So I look over, and there's a woman heading, looking at her phone, dressed all up for clubbing.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at her phone. All of a sudden,
boom.
Bam, right into a pole. Down on her butt, looking around, angry like it's the pole's fault.
Yeah.
Just hysterical.
People have gotten so... I mean, I even see it at restaurants. I can see families, instead of sitting there talking.
Yeah.
I observed this one family. All four of them. Two kids and the parents. All four of them are sitting down. They stopped long enough to place their order, and then bam, they're right back down to their phones, glued into that.
Yep. When I go out to lunch or dinner with somebody, I never, unless, you know, I've said to people, look, my daughter's in town. If she needs me, I will answer the phone. And that's fair. And the same thing with them. But most of the time we don't. You know,
family.
I have friends who are working, right? They're freelancers and they work. So if we go out to lunch and their phone rings, they answer it. Yeah. I get that.
Yeah, that's work.
That's work. And I get that. But other than that, no. Mm-hmm. No. If you're out for an evening with friends, pay attention to your friends. Otherwise, sit home on your butt and don't do anything.
Yeah. But we have become so tethered to them. And the other thing is so many folks think just because somebody texts you or calls you, you got to call them right back right away.
That's right.
I thought the whole purpose was a phone was for convenience.
Yep.
And my terms of convenience are... way of thinking about it is, all right, you call me or you text me, all right, I'll get back to you when it's convenient for me.
That's the whole point
unless
of the phone.
Unless it's an emergency.
Right.
Like you said, family or anything else, or you're, you know, in desperate need.
Right. Right.
No. Don't right. expect me to, you know, respond back.
Yep. Yep.
And I had this one person sat there and said, well, that's rude. No, if they took the time to text you, you got to text them right back. No, you don't. Or, you know, the phone would go off because I got that one thing that lets me know. Well, aren't you going to answer it? No. I'm out here with folks and that. No, it's rude.
That's the one really good thing I like about my watch.
Mm-hmm.
When the phone rings, I can see who's calling.
Oh, okay.
So if it's important, then I can reach for the phone and answer it. If it's not, I can just swipe it right here and ignore the call.
Done.
That mm-hmm. that part I do like about this watch thing. But I tell people all the time, you know, people who are constantly going after that phone, I said, man, whoever you're talking to must be your boss. No, just a friend. Well, then they own you.
Yeah.
What do you mean they own me? Well, every time they call, you jump.
Mm-hmm.
I can see who's on top in that relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not how it is. It's exactly how it is. That is exactly how it is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean to be egotistical, but there are a whole lot of people I don't answer right away because they're not as important to me as the people I'm with.
Yeah, that's the thing. And it's, again, going back to what I said, it's supposed to be a tool of convenience,
right,
not a tool of control of your life.
Right. Unless it's an important emergency or business or whatever.
Emergency is the only thing that trumps anything.
Right. Right. And I tell people all the time, look, here's my hierarchy. You took the time to come out to eat with me. You're more important than whoever's texting me.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
Yes.
It really is that simple.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to spend my time with you, and I'll do that later. Yeah. If it was important, they would call.
Mm-hmm.
If it's just a text, then I'll get back to them.
Yeah. That's what, I used to have discussions and sit there and say, no, because, it's rude not to text them right back. They took the time to text you. Yeah, but how do they know I'm not busy or in the middle of something? Well, you're not, so shouldn't you? No. I'll do it when I want.
I'll get there.
Yeah.
I'll get there. It's not the end of civilization.
Yeah, the world's still going to, turn. The sun's still going to come up in the morning and it's set at night.
And the text is often something like, what are you doing? Well, I'm actually engaged in something at the moment, so why would I even answer that right now?
Yeah.
Because clearly they just want to whatever, and that's not as important.
Or I love it, I don't know where some folks' heads are. They'll call you. Hi, how are you doing? I'm working.
Yeah.
Oh, and then they want to go on with the conversation. I'll say, no, I can't talk now. Goodbye. And they know you're working. So why do they call?
My daughter says, people are the worst.
Yeah. I got to tend to agree with your daughter.
They're not thinking about you. They're thinking about them.
Yeah.
It's pure ego.
Because, they're retired and they're sitting around with nothing to do.
This I don't understand. I'm retired and I don't have time to get everything done.
Mm-hmm.
How the hell did I ever work 60, 70 hours a week?
I don't know.
My days are full. My nights are full. I'm full up.
You got to retire from your retiring?
I got it. No kidding. It's like a vacation for my retirement.
No, you don't have time off coming.
I don't. That's the worst part about retiring. You don't have paid vacation anymore.
No. Once you take it off, it's like, oh, well.
Yep.
Just like with back when I had the business going full time. Folks said, you can take off anytime you want. Yeah.
Sure, if I want to starve.
Paid. Yeah.
If I want to starve and lose my house. Yeah, absolutely.
Love it.
They don't follow through. They latch on to one tiny little aspect and they don't see the big picture and they don't want to see the big picture.
Mm-mm.
Wow, you could be your own boss. That means you could take off anytime you want. Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
But, and they don't want to hear the but.
Yeah, no, they don't.
It's very tough. It's very tough. All right, don't forget you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. And going along with what we said the first news item, Microsoft's cloud computing platform reported $7.43 billion with a B dollars in revenue, an 11% increase year over year. The growth in this unit is huge. The company posted 97% year-over-year growth in its cloud computing platform, Azure, as well as year-over-year growth rate in the mid-90% range for both the second and third quarters, according to a note by Credit Suisse. Our outperform thesis on Microsoft is based on our expectations for strong earning power potential over the next few years, fueled by, one, significant commercial cloud growth, and two, higher cloud gross margins over time, Credit Suisse wrote in the note. Credit Suisse has a price target of $84, which is 13.8% higher than the current share price. The growth of the cloud is a huge opportunity for Microsoft, and it has done a good job in exploiting it, according to the bank. In a survey conducted by Credit Suisse, 40% of respondents said Azure was their preferred cloud platform, which was nearly double the number from just 6 months before. Azure isn't the only fast-growing cloud business for Microsoft. For the first time, the company's cloud version of its Office Productivity Suite outpaced its traditional versions. Revenue from Office 365 Commercial, the cloud version of Office, grew 43% compared to last year. In 2015, CEO Satya Nadella said Microsoft wants to hit a $20 billion run rate for its cloud computing business by the end of its 2018 fiscal year. Having just ended 2017 fiscal year with a run rate of $18.9 billion, it looks like it'll meet that goal handily in the next year. Microsoft's run rate is calculated by the company by multiplying revenue in the last month of the quarter by 12 to estimate the revenue for that business over the next year. Microsoft is up 17.72% this year and down slightly on Friday, according to its earnings on Thursday after announcing its earnings on Thursday after the bell. So are you using Microsoft in the cloud? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415, just like Larry did from Greece, New York. Hi, Larry, what's up?
Well, I'm trying to keep from having to go out and buy a Chromebook like your infomercial is suggesting. But
it's not an infomercial. We just happen to love ours.
I know. And that'll be my next purchase, a book or a box.
Yeah.
But right now, every once in a while, and I haven't been able to figure out a pattern, my laptop just shuts down. I don't know if it's overheating, although I do hear the fan at least time to time. It just turns off.
Okay, here's the thing. Are you using it in a sunny room? Is there perhaps sunlight shining down on the back of it?
No, never direct sunlight.
How's the bottom of it? Is it pretty warm?
It gets pretty warm, so that's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, I'm wondering if that fan unit is shot.
How old is this machine?
It's a refurbished that I've had for a year. I don't know how much the hardware had before that.
First, take a close look at the fan and see if it's plugged up or if the vents are plugged up. If you've got cats or you smoke.
Or just plain dust.
Or like me, you're particularly hirsute. you can plug up those vents. Could be dust.
No cats, no smoke, but I do have some new carpet that gets...
Well, yeah, some compressed air, and on the other underside, you can sit there and blow it into the vents in there.
Make sure it's off.
Yeah, see if that helps at all. But like I say, you could have a fan unit that, once it gets heated up, it seizes up. And then that causes the processor to overheat, and then that shuts the unit down.
Pay attention to the sounds coming out of it. If you hear the fan, is this a PC or a Mac?
It's PC. It's a Gateway PC.
Okay. Yeah. Pay attention to the fans. See if you can hear them. As it starts to warm up, see if the fan is still going or speeding up. If it's not doing either of those things, you've got a problem.
Yeah, because that's shutting off, like I say, that could just be a matter of the bearings in the fan unit. And trying, if it's been refurbished, trying to find and to take that apart is a pain in the butt.
On the other hand, you can buy
when I tried to replace the fan, and I said no. Nope.
Right, you can buy a fan and just blow it across the back of the laptop, and that'll help.
It'll help. But
all right.
Thanks for your help.
Thanks, Larry.
Yeah, one of the problems there is which people don't understand in laptops, because they'll sit there and, can you replace the fan unit? Yeah, we can. But it's going to cost you a couple $100.
Yep.
Because what you don't understand, folks, is the fan's on the bottom. To get to the bottom, you have to take off your top cover and then a lot of little screws to get that motherboard has to come out. So you have to unhook all the ribbon cables that are connected to the keyboard, the mouse touchpad, and everything else. To the hard drives and everything else. That all has to come out because the motherboard has to come out and flip it over. And the only way...
And when you say it's on the bottom, what you mean is when you've got it turned upside down and you're working on the things, it's on the bottom.
Yeah.
In reality, if it's facing up the way most people think of it, it's on the top.
No.
So when you have to, when you turn it over, now it's on the bottom.
Yeah. If you flip you got to literally take the top of the laptop off, the keyboard and all that other stuff.
Right.
Take that motherboard out and then flip it That's how you get at the the fan unit and everything else. And that takes a lot of time. We used to set out a piece of paper, this big brown paper, and we'd draw little squares. This screws, all these little screws go to this section. The little screws here go there. Because it's literally a maze of putting all those little screws, getting them out, and then you got to put it all back together and then make sure it works.
Yep. And it is, they are not designed to be worked on. There are a couple of things that some of them make easy, like adding RAM or changing the hard drive, changing the battery.
You can get access panels there on the bottom.
Right. But beyond that, you literally have to take the thing completely apart. And that is time-consuming and requires a lot of knowledge, and that's expensive.
Well, here's the other thing, and I'm very apprehensive in doing it. You know, when it comes to, well, they go, well, if it's just a fan unit, go ahead and replace it. Yeah, I can. But then the other risk that you're going to have to realize is how long were you letting that machine run, overheating the processor?
Right.
That I go ahead and put a new fan unit in, then all of a sudden you go to turn it on, and it's over. The processor's been overheated so much that it dies. Sorry, I can't predict whether that's going to hold true or not. So, you know, yeah, you're taking a gamble, and you're going to pay big. And that's where, like Larry was saying, you know, it's a refurbished one. I wouldn't, you know, if that thing's dying, it's refurbished, I'd cut bait and run. Take that hard drive out, put it in an external unit, and buy a Chromebook.
Yep. I'll tell you what, it's always fascinating to me about refurbished this is and that is. This watch is refurbished. It's been running for 3 years. My desktop is refurbished. It's been running for 2 years. But I've had refurbished devices that lasted a week.
Yeah.
And it's a crapshoot, you know? And you pay your money and you take your chance. That's the way that works. And we have, there's no magic, you know? All right, we're going to take another break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 41 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Let me find an interesting story. Oh, Apple has released a slew of software updates for nearly all of its systems, and you can now download Mac OS Sierra 10.12.6, iOS 10.3.3, Watch OS 3.2.3, and TV OS 10.2.2. To any of your compatible devices, the updates appear to be minor as most of them focus on bug fixes. And there are a lot of bug fixes. Mac OS Sierra 10.12.6 is the sixth update to this version of Apple's operating system, and it may well very well be the last before the introduction of Mac OS High Sierra. Dude, as per Apple's usual refresher schedule, Mac OS High Sierra should be pushed out to users this fall. According to Apple's information page, Mac OS Sierra 10.12.6 improves the security, stability, and compatibility of Mac systems and tackles three main issues. It resolves an issue that prevents making certain SMB connections from the Finder. It fixes an issue that causes XSAN clients to unexpectedly restart when moving a file within a relation point on a Quantum StorNX file system. That may be the geekiest thing I've said today. It improves the stability of Terminal App. Really? Terminal app unstable? Okay. That's the extent of the details provided for any of these updates. Neither iOS 10.3.3 nor WatchOS 3.2.3 lists any new features, but they do mention general improvements and bug fixes. Similarly to Mac OS, the operating systems for iPhone, iPads, and Apple Watches will be totally revamped when iOS 11 and WatchOS 4 launch. Both of these updates are expected to come out alongside Mac OS High Sierra in the fall. Mac OS Sierra 10.12.6 can be downloaded to supported Mac devices through the Mac App Store, while iOS 10.3.3 is available as a free over-the-air or OTA update, accessible through the Settings app for supported iPhones and iPads. WatchOS 3.2.3 is available for all Apple Watch models through the Watch app under the general setting. The full version of tvOS 10.2.2 is also available for fourth generation Apple TV devices and can be downloaded through the settings menu. Notice, not every device is supported. If you have a less than fourth generation Apple TV device, you don't get the update. If you have an unsupported or older iPhone or iPad, you will not be eligible for the over-the-air update. And older Macs are not able to run macOS Sierra 10.12.6. So are you up to date? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Everybody is vulnerable. Everybody needs to update.
Mm-hmm.
I hear this time and again. Where was I the other day? Somebody was saying, oh, you're the guy who does the Security Tango. That's great. Thanks a lot. And somebody else said, well, I run a Mac, so I don't worry about that.
More business for Steve in his store.
That's not entirely accurate. And he wouldn't believe me.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I don't care. I finally said, you know what? I don't care.
Yeah, no, there's no sense of arguing.
There's no point in it.
Beat you down with their...
Right. Never argue with an idiot. They just drag you down to your level and beat you with experience.
Yeah. Exactly.
So you just let them go.
Mm-hmm. That's okay.
It's fine. Go ahead.
When his machine gets all messed up?
It probably is already all messed up.
Oh, yeah.
So I asked him, I said, is your machine running slower than it used to? Well, yeah, it is. A little or a lot? Well, kind of a lot. Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Probably nothing. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, no, just go on. Keep going.
Yep. There's no one so ungrateful as somebody who won't accept your help.
Well, it's like some of the we've had a few here. We're sitting there trying to explain to them, and that's not what they want to hear, and they want to go off.
Right.
On what they're thinking, and they're totally ignoring what we're trying to help them with as far as advice.
Right. And that's not to say we get it right every time. Let's not say that. But we do get it right sometimes. And we would hope that since we've done the courtesy of listening to your question, you would do us the courtesy of listening to our answer. But that's... And I'm not talking about you folks who call in. I'm talking about out there in the real world as well. And sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it doesn't happen. But you can give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Just like Doug did from Holly, New York. Hi, Doug. What's up?
Hi, Nick. I have a question. I have about a 6-year-old NAS drive. It's got 2 gig or terabyte drives in it, and one of them has failed. What I plan on doing is purchasing 2 larger capacity drives and replacing those, the one that failed and the one that's working. I'm looking to see what might be the best solution for transferring the data on the one drive that's still working.
Are you looking to make these 2 separate drives, or are you planning on turning them into a RAID array? It's not really a RAID array,
yeah.
But are you planning
it? Yeah, it is. It's 2 single 1 terabyte drives. It's a RAID, one, I believe.
Okay. The easiest way to do it would be, that's not going to work. The easiest way to do it would be to buy another enclosure as well and then hook both of them up simultaneously, get the RAID array working, and then move the data from the one remaining drive over to the RAID array. The other way to do it is you got to move it somewhere. If you're going to take that drive out of the enclosure and put the other 2 disks in, then you got to move those data somewhere.
Okay.
How much data do you actually have on it?
Oh, it's the 1 terabyte is almost full, about 90%. One is working, and the other is put in one of the larger capacity, and then restore the RAID with the 2 terabyte drive in it, and then put in a second 2 terabyte drive to you know. Are you following me?
Yeah, I am. Do you have more than 2 enclosures? Can you put 3 drives in at once?
Just the one.
Here's the part I'm not sure of. It depends entirely on the software that's running your RAID array.
Uh-huh.
But in general, having one drive that is full of data, then adding a second drive to it and turning the two of them into a RAID array, many of the software programs out there that run RAID won't do that. They will want to wipe out the 2 drives and put on and reformat them as a RAID array.
Oh, okay. It's a Western Digital. Actually, this enclosure, it's about 6 or 7 years old, and I had one of the drives failed in it previously. What I did back then about 3 years ago was replace it with a new 1 terabyte drive. It's actually a Western Digital drive in a Seagate enclosure. And that seemed to work.
Well, here's the thing. Google, who has had billions, literally, of hard drives over the decades, has a lot of empirical data on how long a hard drive lasts.
Mm-hmm.
And the mean time between failures is 5 years.
Right, right, right.
So you got 6. So you beat the average.
One of them.
Right, right. Yeah. Which means the other one, it's a ticking time bomb.
Exactly.
So I completely agree that it's time to do it all over again. But really, if you're going to make a purchase like that, the less costly piece would be a new enclosure. And the easiest thing to do would be to buy a new enclosure that you know is working well and you know, may not, it may be that the old controller, the old enclosure contributed to the death of the drive,
mm-hmm.
right? So buy a new enclosure, put the 2 drives in it, get it set up. That makes it much easier to move the data over from one drive to the other.
Okay.
And then retire both the drive and the enclosure.
Okay, so I already ordered 2 Western Digital Red drives, so I'm not leaning towards that one. If I had an external hub to put in the working drive that's in the enclosure now, could I put the 2 new drives in the enclosure and transfer that way?
Sure, sure. But you know, if the enclosure is 6 years old, I'm not entirely copacetic with how well it's going to continue to work.
Yeah. Okay.
That's your choice, but I'm just telling you that.
Okay. The probability of doing it with the hub and then putting the working drive, the 1 terabyte drive that's in there now, in the hub, and then put in the 2 new drives in the enclosure and then transfer that way, that probably would be the best.
That would certainly work.
Okay.
That would certainly work. But again, the caveat is that old enclosure as well.
Right. Okay. Okay. All right. I'll take that. I'll take that into consideration.
I know. It means spending more money, and I get that. I do. I truly do.
All right. You got a lot of media on it, and I'm keeping my fingers crossed that it lasts till Tuesday when I get some new drives.
Yep, yep, yep. Good luck, Doug. Thanks.
All right. Thank you so much. Have a great one.
You too. Bye-bye.
Yeah, it's very tough. It's very
tough to have to spend money, and I truly do get that. But 6 years, man, that enclosure and those drives owe you nothing.
Yeah.
You know, they've
counted
their life.
Yeah.
They've lived their life. And like I said, Google has empirical data over billions of hard drives. The average mean time between failure, 5 years, which means some last 10 years and some die right out of the box. So, but the average lifetime is 5 years. So, and that's true of SSD cards as well, by the way. Very weird little statistic that they both last approximately the same amount of time. So, you know, if you've got, I've got a couple of old laptops that have 10-year-old drives in them, but I don't run them every day. You know, it's 10 years of runtime.
Yeah.
But I don't, at this point, use them for much of anything.
Yeah, just occasionally.
Yeah.
I've got one, it's a terabyte drive, and I use that. You know, I only turn it on when I want to back stuff up.
Yep.
I've already got my stuff backing up to the cloud, but like I said, just the peace of mind. I back it up to this other drive, and it's mainly photos. Yep. Anything else, you know, I mean, it's up on the Google Cloud. I don't worry about that. Documents and all that, I stand by what I said. You know, photos are the one thing, folks, you can't get back. Once they're gone, they're gone.
They're gone.
Documents, you can always recreate those. Yep. There's no problem in that. And then any other things, say, like financial data or that type of stuff that you're trying to do, back that up. Like my Quicken, you know, back that up. Although I still got that on their cloud service, too. And I think that cost me... What was it, $19 for a year?
That's a business expense. Yeah, it's nothing.
You know, to back up my Quicken
yep.
to our QuickBook to the cloud. So it's automatically doing that every other night. It backs it up for me. So yep. it's up there.
Yep. As an individual, I don't spend money on backing up my stuff, but I back it up everywhere. But if you're a business... You know, $60 for a year for something like Carbonite is not a lot of money to back up your business. All right, that music tells me that our first hour is done. But, you lucky, lucky people, you get to do this for a whole nother hour. We're going to take a slightly longer break at this point to let our underwriters speak their piece. And then we will be back with a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. With Dave Enright, with me, Nick Francesco, Steve Ray at work today at Mac Ave doing what he does there, which no one knows what that is, but if you see him, try to catch him doing something. We'll be back in just a few minutes with a whole lot more sound bites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Mark from Greece, New York on the line. What's up, Mark?
Hello, tech gurus. How are you today?
PG, how are you?
I'm good. Question for you. Have you ever heard of a program called Slim Cleaner?
Slim Cleaner?
Yes.
No. Mm-mm.
Okay. It's a program I use. It's a utility program, you know, for optimizing and all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
What I love about it is it has a tab for Windows Tools, and it puts everything that you really can't find easily in Windows in one place. Your system information, your device manager, security, it's all in one little tab, and you open up and everything is there. And I love it for that. It's a pretty cool program.
Nice.
But the other thing that they have that I found out a few weeks ago that I really love is called Slim Drivers, another free program, which you can pay for, both of these if you want to. And you open the program and you scan the computer and it finds the relevant drivers. Now, I have read that sometimes it does find the wrong driver, but it's... From what I've read, that doesn't happen very often, and it's so neat, I figured I would tell you guys about it.
Very cool. Very, very cool.
And it's a free program. Most of them, they want to charge you $30 a year for a driver update, and I don't know. I think my computer over the years has only had two driver updates, one when they installed it and one a few years ago. I'm not paying somebody $30 a year for a program I'm barely going to use.
Right.
In my opinion, you know.
Right.
But this is a free utility, and it also, being that it's free, you can only download and install drivers one at a time, which does require a restart. So it is a little tedious, but for free it's great, and it creates restore points and backups so that if it doesn't work right, you can restore the system back.
Right.
Yeah. So I figured I would throw that out there to people that really are uncomfortable trying to find the proper drivers for their computer in an easy to figure out program.
Right. Excellent. Thanks.
So, and by the way, I've got relatives in my family that are Mac users that I cannot convince that they need security.
I know. Somebody has turned them into unthinking, smug little so-and-sos, and nobody believes that Macs have problems. And I'm not saying that they're rife with them, but they have them, and why not protect yourself? It doesn't take any... You know, back 20 years ago, when every computer was underpowered and slow, I get it. But nowadays, Macs and PCs and everything else are so fast, you don't even notice the antivirus stuff working in the background. So why not let it run? I don't get it.
Yeah, I cannot convince them. They think I'm crazy. And I don't argue with them. I go, well, there's a little tidbit of advice. It was free. Choose to do what you want with it. But, they it's not worth the argument.
That's right. Nobody appreciates free advice.
You can even prove it to them. And I told them, I said, even before they had Intel processors, it was a little less of a likely scenario. But now that they're running Intel processors, it's
right.
So much more rampant in that in those devices.
Right. For those of you who are fairly new to Macintosh machines, Macs used to run a Motorola processor, the Motorola 68000 and its family. And it ran a completely different instruction set from Intel. So if you wrote an Intel virus, a virus that ran on Intel processors, it would not touch the Motorola stuff, which is part of where this Macs are invulnerable to viruses nonsense comes from. They were not, in fact, vulnerable to Windows viruses. They are now. Many viruses are written in high-level languages, and Macs are not vulnerable to them. But a significant number are written in very low-level languages, even machine code, and that's the same across all platforms because Intel is Intel is Intel. So if you catch one of those, it runs. Sorry.
Yep. They don't believe me, so I just, every once in a while, I remind them, did you put some security software on there? No. Okay.
Right. You can say is okay.
And I tell them, don't come to me because I'm not a Mac guy.
Right.
I don't know. All I know is I know that you're vulnerable.
Yep.
So, but anyways, remember, Slim Drivers, very cool and free.
I'll check it out. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye bye.
Bye.
I don't know. It's very cool. It's I looked at both. Both seem to have very good reputations, Slim Cleaner and Slim Drives.
Pardon?
Slim Drivers.
Okay, hold on.
And I haven't had any experience with either of them, but the cursory research I just did tells me that they are pretty good programs, and Mark certainly endorses them, so that's a way to start. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Sherry from Chi Lai, New York. Hi, Sherry, what's up?
Hi. I have a HP Touch Smart notebook, and I recently been having problems with the touch pen, especially when I go into the internet. It doesn't seem to want to work right anymore. It's like delayed or something. I have to pull it down in the taskbar and then put it back up, and then it'll work. I'm not sure what could be going on with it.
Have you checked for any updates for that?
Yes, I have, and there weren't any out there. Oh, yeah, this machine has been updated to Windows 10. It was a Windows 7 machine.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I haven't had any problems until, like, the last month. When
Windows did their last update, it caused issues with a number of folks with different problems and different issues. And this could just be another one.
Yeah, what you need to do is, you're lucky you have an HP product. You can go to HP's website, and under support, you can put the serial number of your device, and it will show you all the drivers that are available for your device. You need to look and see if there's a stylus driver, a touch pen driver, for Windows 10, because it is very possible that either it didn't update correctly, or the when you installed it, or there has been an update to the driver since that time.
Okay, I think I tried that, and I don't know, maybe I wasn't looking in the right place or didn't really know what the thing was called. And, I didn't really see anything. I mean, maybe I don't know what they call it, because on the machine itself, it says pen with digitizer. I mean, what do they actually call this thing? I don't know.
Right, they call it the touchscreen stylus pen.
Okay, I'm writing it down. Okay.
The touchscreen stylus pen. Did this come with the machine and it was working fine? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. One thing that you might want to do is clean the screen.
Oh.
if it is a little dirty, it may not be making contact. And I don't mean dirty like it's filthy. But if you do some stuff with your hands or whatever, or you've had your hands on the screen, or, you know, I spend all day talking in front of my computer, so I often have to wipe it down a little bit. So if any of that is true for you, you might find that cleaning the screen with a good, you know, proper solvent and then letting it dry before you turn it back on again, they make windscreen cleaners, spray bottles. I use the stuff for my glasses.
Right.
And you make sure your machine is off just in case. Just in case the stuff for the glasses may not be electrically inert. Right, so the stuff for computer screens theoretically won't cause a spark and a short if it gets in, but the stuff I use is not designed that way. So I turn my machine off, I spray it down, I wipe it clean, I let it wait a little while to evaporate anything that might have slid down, and then I turn it back on again, and I do that once a week. Depends on how much talking I've been doing in front of it.
Right.
But in your particular case, particularly if it's open all the time, if you have animals, if you have dust in the air, if you touch the screen, that sort of fare, it never hurts to clean it up a little bit and see if that does the job, particularly on some of the models where you can bend the whole thing around so that it folds in half and looks like a tablet.
Right. Mine does that.
Right. So you end up carrying it around, which means your hand is all over the screen.
That's true.
Yep. And so, you never know what's on your hand. Just the standard oil and grease that every human being accumulates during the day, or you petted the dog and then you touched the screen. And, there's just a million things. So clean it off with some sort of solvent. Like I said, you can buy screen cleaner itself. I use the stuff I use to clean my glasses. But whatever you do, make sure it's off when you do that. Clean it up, let it dry a little bit, a couple minutes. It's not, just a few minutes. And you should be good to go.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Have fun. We find that back in the day when people had desktop machines, what they mostly did was every once in a while had to wipe the dust off it.
Yeah.
But when you have laptops and you have particularly the kind of a tablet or the kind of a laptop that converts into a tablet, you walk around with your hands all over the screen. You put it down in places that may not be clean.
Well, it's like going back to the old days when we used to have mice,
right,
with the roller balls in them.
Right.
And, all of a sudden they'd start acting up. What folks don't realize is sometimes those pens, even with the pens I would assume too, I know it's a, like you said, a contact thing, But the mice used to get a lot of oil and gump and that inside the roller, so you had to take it out and literally clean all the junk off the rollers. The same could be with this pen tip. You know, if you take the pen tip and spray some, say, alcohol, rubbing alcohol on a cloth.
Right.
And then just wipe it, you know, the pen down in case there's any film buildup on that.
Excellent point. Sherry, of course, is still listening. Dave is right. The stuff you do for the screen, you should also do to the pen itself.
Yeah, because you're
a buildup on
like
that.
Like I say,
right?
You're running your finger across it. Like you said, it's the oils and film in there, and that can also build up on the pen tip also.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it wouldn't hurt just to do that too.
It's the first step. It's a troubleshooting step, and it should be the first step
because
it's the cheapest and easiest.
Yeah, and you can get those wipes to wipe down a monitor, you know, and that they're safe. You can take that same wipe and wipe down the pen too because it's safe for electronics.
Right.
It's not going to hurt it.
And those come in big dispenser boxes, a whole roll of them in a box. You could do that if you want.
Yeah.
Or you could just use the micro cloth stuff. Or,
yeah.
Like I said, I use...
Just to get rid
of
that.
The eyeglasses stuff, but I make sure it's off when I do.
Yeah. Just, you know, to get rid of that film and that. Because you don't realize how much, you know, you put on it. And I said, the mice, I used to sit there and I pull out so much junk. And then all of a sudden it started working. Folks goes, oh, that's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, then
people eat in front of their machines and they drink in front of their machines and... And, you know, they wipe their hands on their pants and they
eat over the keyboard.
Yeah.
Oh, the stuff that we used to clean out of, we used to take the keyboards outside because I had I have a hookup outside. And I just
set it. For your air compressor.
Yeah, for the air compressor. And I'd set it down on the table out there. We had a wooden table out there. And to this day, I can still take stuff out there and hook up the compressor and just blow it out. And the birds in that love it because all the dust and everything else, especially
food
when I take
particles.
Oh, the stuff when I also open up a desktop case, we take that outside and we sit there, stand back and blow it all out. But the thing of it is, though, you got to worry about, you just can't take your regular compressor. Here's the one note that I'm going to say, folks. Don't go running outside and take your, you know, computer out there and take dad's compressor and start blowing it out. I have a compressor, but I also have what they call an inline filter. Because the inline filter will help protect any moisture from getting on it. Because there's a lot of moisture in your compressor's system.
Right. And you also have to worry about static when you're using a compressor because the rotor builds up static. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour, and you've been listening, and you're continuing to listen to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, right here on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve, next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Larry from Rochester, New York on the line. Hi, Larry. What's up?
Good, guys. Good evening, and how are you?
Peachy, you?
Good, good. I've got something that's bugging me now for a while, and so I thought I would just ask the question and listen over the radio. I just cut my cable bill by about $85 a month. We're up close to $200 a month. And I guess what I'm wondering is, and I hear you guys talk about some things sometimes, is there any real way to cut the tether with cable and or dish and still get the kind of television experience? Now, I know I'm old enough to know when there was only the three channels, et cetera, and you had TV. But I don't need 1,000 channels. I only watch a few anyway, and the only other people that would look at something different are the grandkids from time to time.
Right.
But I'm just sick of these $200 bills with cable and the whole nine yards. So are there any ways to kind of get around that?
Yeah, I've done it.
Larry, the good news is you're living in what's quickly approaching the golden age of cable cutting.
Yeah, I cut the cable over a year ago. All I do is use my internet service, and I bought a box called Roku. A Roku box, which I think cost me all of $59.
R-O-K-U, yep. Roku.
Okay.
And what I did is I signed up for a service called Sling. And Sling, yeah, there's Sling, there's Netflix, there's a bunch of them.
S-L-I-N-G?
Yep, Sling. And I signed up for Sling, and it cost me, because the wife likes the Hallmark channels and that, I spent $29.99 a month, and I get all the channels that I had with cable. That's TNT, TBS, you know, Discovery Channel. You know, I mean, it just goes on and on. If you look at the package, and you can select different packages. Matter of fact, Amazon, I think, is going to come out with one, be competitive with Sling. But right now, I like Sling. I can get the Discovery channels, like I say, the DIY. I like the home improvement programs and all that. And they're all there. And I'm only paying $29.99 a month.
Now, what about internet service?
That's separate.
Yeah, that's separate.
Okay. So
here's the deal. If you have, well, let me start with a disclaimer.
If I now had green light.
Now that net neutrality is dead, there is nothing that would stop someone like Spectrum from purposely slowing down Sling TV and making it harder for you to watch easily that stuff.
Even though I'm paying for faster...
Yes.
Internet service?
Yes, yes. Net neutrality is dead. The current government has killed it, and so there is simply nothing that will stop that from being... all that has to happen is they have to just, you know, if Spectrum decided to do that, bang, it's done. But that said, if your internet service lets you do this... All you need is a fairly quick internet service. 4 megabits is not great. 8 or 10 is better. This net neutrality thing, don't let me scare you. That's not to say anybody's going to do it. It's just that there's nothing to stop it from happening now. So what happens is you need an internet service. And then that $20 a month for Sling or $29 is... Dave is paying, and then, you know, if you wanted to pay the whatever it is, $8 or $10 a month for Netflix and, you know, things like that, you can get a pretty decent set of things to watch for very little money.
And you still get news and all this kind of thing.
Well, it depends on whose package you go with, but number of the packages include local stations.
Okay.
But in addition to that, depending on where you live, you can buy an HD antenna for anywhere from $10 to $100, again, depending on where you live.
Okay, and I have one of those. I just haven't hooked it up.
Well, you might want to do that first and see what kind of quality and what kind of channels you get. You will certainly get all your local channels, but we get about 18 different channels, and some of them are comedy channels or second channels for the various regular stations and things like that, you know, as well as everything else. So you can watch pretty much everything you used to watch. What you don't get is a DVR with most of these services.
Okay. I don't really care about that. At least I don't think I do.
Right. And some of them do have it for an extra cost. Cloud-based DVR is a big thing now, and a lot of people are talking about, a lot of these companies are talking about providing it, obviously for an extra charge. But the basic idea is you need to take a look at the various options and consider carefully your viewing habits and what shows you like to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But there's stuff out there. You can cut the cord.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, frankly, for $200 a month, you can get a heck of a lot of entertainment for a heck of a lot less.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty much where I am. So I'm down now to a little less than $90 a month, somewhere around there. But it just galls me that, you know, if you
with all the stuff they have, I guess you could pay $300 a month for this stuff if you were inclined.
Oh, yes,
I just don't want to go that route.
Mm-hmm. Right. And some things will cost you a decent amount of money. Like if you want one of the stations that's not on many of these things is CBS. They have their own thing, and it's $20 a month.
Right.
But many of them are, and there's lots of news and lifestyle-type programs and entertainment, comedy. If you're a sports guy, there's sports packages, movie channels. But man, there's just a bunch of stuff. Take a look at Sling TV at sling.com.
Mm-hmm.
And look at some of the others. There's a bunch of things like it that are out there. Like Dave said, the Roku box has a number of options on it. Amazon TV.
Netflix.
If you're already a Prime, Amazon Prime person, you can watch a lot of that stuff right now. Netflix, of course, and a bunch of others. So, and Netflix is just getting better and better and better. They blew out their earnings. They shocked Wall Street in the amount of money they made, the number of people they got, subscribers. So it's all getting much bigger. And cable is starting to worry.
Well, I'm one of the ones that are going to help them worry because I'm
good for you.
That's what I did. Yeah,
done with it.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, thank you guys.
As usual,
you come up with good stuff. Keep going.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Uh huh. Bye bye.
Have fun. Yeah. You know, we're not advocating any particular way to do things, but if you do want to cut cable, there are lots of ways to do it. If you want to cut the cord. There are a lot of people who don't have any kind of cable. My daughter is moving into a new apartment in Arizona, and I asked her. I said, "You know, what's included?" And she rattled off a couple of things. And one of the things I asked her was, "Is cable included?" And she stopped, and she said, "You know, I didn't even bother to ask." She gets all her entertainment in other ways.
Mm-hmm.
She just doesn't think cable anymore.
Yeah. I don't.
Right.
And like I say, and I love that I have the flexibility, and it's only costing me $29 a month. You know,
right.
30. I'll say 30.
Let's call it 30. It's $29.99.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's 30, $30. Be real.
Yeah.
Wow, a whole 30?
Yeah. I mean, like I say, all the channels are there that I want to watch. You know,
and that's the secret. You know, it depends on your viewing habits.
And you'd be surprised that, you know, if you look at the channels that you, because what I did is I made a list. I sat there and made a list of all the channels that I really watch on cable when I had it. And I said, okay. And I started, because when they jacked my bill up, what was it, another $15. I said, yeah, sorry, you're off the specials. Now with this new company, it is here's what it is, and that's what it is. No wheeling, dealing, that's it.
Right.
I was, really? You know, yep, that's our new, okay.
Here's my new deal.
Yeah, let me think about that. So I went, and, like I said, made my list, looked it over, and then I went and started looking at all those packages. You know, and I looked at the Sling one, and I thought, okay, there's all the channels I like because they have different bundle packages. And I thought, yeah, I like it all, but they were missing the Hallmark one. Oh, shoot. Not 3 days later, because I had signed up for my email alerts of, you know, new things and that happening. 3 days later, all of a sudden they come back and say, oh, we have now this entertainment package, lifestyle package that you can add on for $5. That drove it from $25.99 up to the $29.95. But the $24.99 up to the
$29.99. Yeah, and there's Hallmark Channel right there.
Yeah, and they added it right in. I thought, oh, well, then this is a no-brainer. I wound up going over to Spectrum. At the time, it was Time Warner. Said, here's my cable box. Well, what can we do to make you stay? I said, cut my bill down to $30 a month.
Right.
No, we can't do that. Well, I said, then see ya. And right. I walked out.
I mean, even if you bought everything, I don't know what you'd be paying, but it's closer to 50 than it is to 100.
Yeah.
It might be under 50 for all I know.
Yeah.
They've even got the premium channels. If you cannot live without Game of Thrones, which, by the way, I have never seen a single episode
Me neither.
Of.
Same here.
You can get HBO if you really must have Comedy Central or CNN or, you know, FX or the History Channel. I love the History Channel when it does real history.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Sundance TV or Fandor or any of those Turner Classic Movies. I watch that.
Oh, yes.
All the time. Stars. I'm a big fan of Stars. So Showtime, you get all of that stuff. So, and that's just one company, right?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
I said, if you're an Amazon Prime person, you get a bunch of that stuff, as well as part of your Amazon Prime package. And I continue to forget this. I continue to forget it. We have Amazon because Elaine buys metric bucket loads of stuff through Amazon. Well, for the coffee stand,
yeah,
et cetera,
yeah.
et cetera.
Yeah.
It's all two-day free shipping.
Mm-hmm.
But with that comes all kinds of other stuff, books and mm-hmm. entertainment of all sorts. And I keep forgetting this. I keep forgetting that it's there, and I have to go watch some stuff.
Hmm.
So, yeah. Anyway, let's go back to the phones. Our next caller is our friend Bodan from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Bodan. What's up?
I got two quick questions for you guys. Hey, listen, what do you guys recommend for people who occasionally have to go out of town? They have a PC with a, you know, a monitor and the old desktop. Do you recommend turning everything off if you're going to be away for a few days, or do you leave everything on?
I turn everything off.
You do? You shut everything down?
If I'm going to be gone for more than a couple of days,
yeah.
for more than a day, yes, I turn it all off. Now, that said, it depends on what you do with your machine, right? If you're the sort of person who phones into your machine and does stuff off your machine, then you got to leave it on. If you do a lot of backup, it's kind of six of one, right? You're not there to create anything, so what are you backing up?
But no, it would just be running without me doing anything programmed or scheduled to do.
Right. Now, I turn everything off if I'm going to be gone more than a day. If I go, like, we went to a picnic last week in somewhere, Angola, New York, and I left everything on. But if I'm going to be gone for a couple of days or overnight or whatever,
you turn it off.
Turn it all off.
Hey, one other thing is this. On one of my coworkers on my LG phone downloaded an app called Android Assist. Just so I can monitor things, I can clear out like the cache and stuff like that. From what you know on Android-based telephones, such as this LG model that I have, how often should one clear out the cache? And also, I noticed that you can download programs such as you have like on Security Tango, like CCleaner and Super Spy Anti-Spyware. Is that necessary on an Android-based telephone when one, like myself, really doesn't use a lot of apps?
Well, the problem is that nowadays we are seeing malware coming in the form of text messages. So having something that runs on your machine that actually protects you from those is a good thing. I use Lookout for that. But I also use CCleaner once in a while. I run it maybe once a month, right? Not mm-hmm. huge, but once a month or so. Theoretically, it keeps my machine clean.
Yeah, I've got the only thing I have is this Android Assist program. I don't know if you're familiar with it or if anybody you guys have seen it. It basically just got a button there. You can clear out the cache and you can clear out the system. I've done it like maybe once a week, once every 2 weeks, and stuff like that.
Yeah, if it came out of the Google Store, it should theoretically be a pretty good product, and at least not, you know, malware. They catch most of that anyway, and so you should be fine.
All right. How often would you recommend running a program such as that or one of the other ones that you have?
I'd run it when the phone slows down.
Say what?
I'd run it when the phone slows down.
Okay.
All right, we got to go.
Thank you.
Thanks. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Nick Francesco, you 40 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we've got Don from Greece, New York on the line. What's up, Don?
Hi, guys. Yeah, a few weeks ago, when I was trying to bring up Google Chrome, it told me that I was infected with the Zeus virus.
Mm-hmm.
And it also gave an 800 number to call, but I didn't call that because I didn't want to do any ransomware.
Right. And that's what it was.
So what I did was I rebooted the computer a few times to no avail. I had to go away on a trip, so I left the computer off for that time.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came back, there was no complaining that I was infected by Zeus anymore.
Yeah.
And so my question is, do you think my antivirus software might have taken care of it?
No, you got to be running anti-spyware.
Yeah, what I did was, not trusting that it went away, I ran a security tango.
Good man.
Perfect.
And that didn't find anything that said Zeus to it.
No, well, sometimes it doesn't. Did it find anything at all?
Oh, yeah, I found a lot of stuff.
Oh, yeah, it'll go by different names. That's the whole thing.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So the other thing it could have been was fake.
Mm, right? Most likely.
Many times what happens is when you boot up Chrome, what's your homepage?
I don't know.
Okay. But you usually end up with some page somewhere.
Yeah, when you click on Chrome, it opens up whether it's, say, Google search or...
Yeah, it's Google search. It's the basic google.chrome.com.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
What's been happening is that what these people have been doing is taking out ads, Google ads, that are perfectly innocuous, and then they change the ad. And that change pops up a window that says, oh, you're infected with this or that or the other thing. Google finds those pretty quickly and gets rid of them. But for a day or two, sometimes 3 days, you'll have this pop-up every time you open Windows because they spend a lot of money on ads.
Right.
And the basic idea is you get this window that pops up and says you've been infected by Zeus. Call this number. You call the number. They want to get into your machine. They get into your machine. They steal all kinds of information. They plant back doors, and then they charge you $250 for that.
Oh, wow.
So you lucked out.
Yep, you did the right thing.
It is certainly possible that it was a real virus and the security tango took care of it. It is also possible that it was a fake virus and Google caught it and took it away from their ads.
Oh, okay. So at this point, you don't think I need to bring it into somebody to look at?
It doesn't seem so. You seem to be fine. If you run the security tango again and it comes up clean, you're good.
Yep.
Okay. Okay, thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
All right, take care. Pleasure, Don. Thanks.
Thanks. Great show.
Thank you, and great job not being fooled by that stuff, because that happens too often, I'm afraid. We find a lot of people have been caught by those things. Nothing we can do. Once you've given them your money and your information, they have it. It's out there. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dennis from Rochester, New York. What's up, Dennis?
You were talking about cutting the cable bill. How does satellite TV compare to cable? Is it just about the same cost, and how good is it actually?
Well, my father-in-law had...
Does rain really bother it, or can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, my father-in-law had it, and he lived in Brockport. And in the 6 years that he had it, he lost signal twice, both during incredibly violent rainstorms, both for about a minute and a half.
Okay.
That's the only real experience I have with satellite. It may depend certainly on the quality of the dish you get and where you live and how unobstructed your view is of the sky. Where my father-in-law had his antenna, he had about 90 degrees of sky open all around him. So it was, you know, pretty, there was
pretty
nothing
good
in the way. Right.
Yeah.
So
clear sight,
right,
line of sight.
Clear line of sight everywhere. So that's my only real personal experience with it. Anecdotally, I have friends who have it and say they've never lost the signal Now, that doesn't mean they're watching 24/7, so never means they never saw it, right? But it seems to be fine. Most people do not seem to have a problem with DirecTV or any of the other satellite providers that I know of.
Is the cost about the same as cable? Is it just as expensive as cable?
It can be. It depends on the package you get.
It depends on your the bundle that you want.
Right. You know, if you get the whole home DVR and four or five sets and blah, 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 you're really going up there. There's no getting around that.
You're going to have to do your homework.
Right. Right. You've got to take the same thing we said to Leary. You have to decide what it is that's important to you. What do you watch? Do you need it to have a DVR? Do you need specific sets of channels that may cost extra, like HBO or Showtime or all of that stuff? And then you need to go look at, you need to write all those down, figure out what they're costing you through Spectrum, then go look at DirecTV and at cord cutting and at everything else to see where you would save the most money.
Okay, and you cannot get internet from satellite, is that correct?
You can. I would not recommend it. It is not terribly fast.
Okay.
I would get my internet service through someone else.
That's very good. I mean, it's good information that you gave me, and
thank
it
you.
Can help me to figure out whether I want to do Roku or Stay or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, like
right.
I said,
thanks, guys.
Yeah, you've got to make your list. I mean, as I said, I sat there and made a list and, you know, went through what was important to me, what I really wanted in as far as channels, and, you know, give them my internet and that, and weighed the whole thing out. And I don't regret for one moment cutting the cord one bit.
Right.
And for what I'm getting, it suits my needs.
Right. Now, again, let me say the caveat of net neutrality is dead. So it is now perfectly legitimate that a company like Spectrum would say the competing stuff, we're going to slow down. Now, again, somebody like Greenlight, they don't have a dog in that hunt. All they provide is internet service. They don't care what you do with it.
I wish they'd come across the street.
All they have to do is go across the street. I've told you, sling a wire over.
I'm going to have to talk to find out where I can hook it. I'll run the wire.
They don't have a dog in the hunt, so I don't suspect that there will ever be a point where Greenlight will slow down some provider for me.
No.
But it is now legal. Whether they do it or not is a separate issue. But it is now legal for a provider to decide to slow down or charge more to somebody else.
Yeah, especially with, and I don't think that's going to become a big issue for them because the way they bundle everything. You know, you can't just, you know, you got to get it as a bundle.
Right. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
But that's just a caveat.
One little data point. One little twist in the knot there that, you know, could really mess things up for folks.
Yep. It's an issue that will continue to come up over time. What is the best way? Should I cut the cord? And if I do, what's the best way?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like I said,
to cut the cord. And what are the issues involved in doing that?
And definitely, folks, I can't stress enough. Do your homework. Sit down, take the time, and do the research. There's a lot of different packages out there. We've just mentioned a couple. There are others out there. Like I say, you can individually just get, if you're just a CBS fan or NBC, you can get various streams, you know, just for that. Or, like I say, you can go to Amazon, the Netflix, Sling. There's a bunch of them out there that you have options.
Right.
But, again, you got to do your homework.
Right. So, for example, and it's not just you, it's the whole family.
Yeah.
Right? So my wife cannot live without her Gibbs. We would have to get CBS All Access. There's no question there.
I've got, with the Sling, I have CBS.
There you go. I like to time shift. So I would need some sort of DVR-like thing. But those are all data points. So we'll see what causes that in the future. All right. That music tells me that we're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I'm Nick Francesco. I want to thank everybody who called in, and I want to apologize to all those of you to whom we did not get. Really, you have to call earlier. A bunch of people called in at the last minute. We can't take those calls. And I'm sorry. But call in earlier next time. Don't go away, though. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael is here to keep him on the straight and narrow. And you will see us in next week. Maybe we'll even have Steve Ray with us. You never know. We were lucky this week. We may not stay, but he's listening in, shaking his fist at the monitor right now. But we'll be back. Here comes George now. And Michael, we'll see you next week with the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours.